One of America's oldest companies files for bankruptcy.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in New York, good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson. It's officially called the Great Atlantic and Pacific Tea Company, and it's been around for 151 years. But the grocery store chain, more commonly known as A&P, is fighting to stay alive. The New Jersey-based company runs 395 grocery stores around the Northeast, but now A&P has filed for bankruptcy. Marketplace's Janet Babin joins me now live in our New York studio to talk about it. Good morning, Janet.
Good morning, Jeremy.
So they've been in business for 151 years and now bankruptcy. Yeah. What happened?
Well, you know, like a lot of companies, A&P has struggled during this recent downturn. I mean, margins are tight in the grocery store business, and at least in everything but luxury sales these days, there's been reduced spending by consumers, and we've got intense competition on price. So the company blamed the warehouse stores and the discount chains like Walmart and dollar stores with compounding its problems and the expense of lease obligations at locations that are closed, but the company still has to pay for. A&P got itself into debt and is finding it hard to climb out of it.
So now bankruptcy, what does that mean? What happens now?
Well, you know, bankruptcy doesn't necessarily mean the end for a company. Often it's a chance to get the house in order and get out from under debt, in this case, $1 billion in debt. The New York Post reports also that L.A. billionaire Ron Burkle, who already owns a lot of A&P stock and made the majority of his money in the grocery business, might now try to wrest control of A&P from a German-based firm that's had control of the stores since the late 1970s.
All right. Well, we'll be watching to see what happens. Marketplace's Janet Babin here in New York, thanks.
Thank you.
Well, in Washington today, Larry Summers makes his last speech as director of President Obama's National Economic Council. There's speculation the president will name a replacement for Summers who can smooth over strained relations with the business community. On that note, the president will meet with a bunch of CEOs on Wednesday. Our Washington Bureau Chief John Dimsdale reports now on the White House's efforts to make nice with the private sector.
Last week, President Obama got behind a tax code overhaul that could benefit corporations. Martin Regalia is chief economist at the Chamber of Commerce. He says tax reform is a good idea, and thanks to Republican victories in Congress, business now has a seat at the White House negotiating table.
Where you have divided government, you actually can come to a table and discuss without having the feeling that you're going to be served as the main course.
The last successful tax reform was in 1986, when President Ronald Reagan was closer to the business community than Obama is. George Yin, who was a Senate staffer at the time, says that means Obama's tax reform faces strong headwinds.
That strategy becomes that much more difficult, it seems, because President Obama then has to go against the very sector that he already doesn't have very good relations with.
Still, Yin says tax reform gives the White House a chance to repair its standing with the business community. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. Markets are higher right now in Asia and in Europe. They're up about 0.7% in London and in Paris. There was concern that the Chinese would raise interest rates today after a report said that inflation in China surged to 5.1% in November, but the Chinese did not hike interest rates. On Wall Street Friday, the Dow jumped 40 points to close at 11,410.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by the all-new Chevrolet Volt, available soon in select markets. Details at ChevyVolt.com. The all-new Chevrolet Volt. It's more car than electric. And by Ally Bank, offering its Raise Your Rate CD, as well as online savings account and money market account. Learn more at AllyBank.com. Sustainability coverage is supported in part by the Candida Fund, furthering values that contribute to a healthy planet.
We are less than 2 weeks away from Christmas. Sorry, I know that can be a stressful thing to hear when you still have shopping to do, especially if you have to buy something for little kids. What do you get for a two-year-old? Well, a growing number of parents say they've got a year-round solution, gift registries for children. Sally Herships has the story.
I'm in Maplewood, New Jersey, about to hit a party.
Happy birthday to you.
It's for one-year-old Asher Friedland. He has an older sister, so his mom, Danielle, has lots of birthday experience. But this year, she tried something new, registering for gifts for both kids.
My daughter's five. She doesn't tell me that much about her friends.
Friedland says picking out presents for other people's kids can be tough. Registries, she says, are convenient. So, are gift registries for kids tacky, or do they just have a bad rap? Time for another party.
Okay, can I take coats?
Birthday boy David Lavender is 2. His family lives in Brooklyn. While his mom, Nora, cooked lunch for the partygoers, she told me a registry could seem rude, but she likes the idea of being able to suggest presents.
We have limited funds, so the idea of like saying these are the kind of clothes we like has some appeal to it, although I didn't register for him. It's probably the tacky factor. Although I registered for my wedding, so I guess it's not that different.
Or is it? I'm still confused. So I asked Amy Dickinson. She writes the syndicated Ask Amy column.
In my view, the whole idea of registering for gifts for a one-year-old is cuckoo crazy.
Dickinson says a birthday for a young kid should be a family celebration, not a gift grab. And she says parents who register could miss out.
I'm a mother of 5, and I might want to give your one-year-old something that you haven't thought of.
But Asher's mom, Danielle Friedland, says she tried to make her kids' registries thoughtful, and she only gave out information if people asked. Well, at least there's one group who just doesn't care.
What did you get?
Cards, Spider-Man, Toy Story!
I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
And finally, to the highest heights of stupidity. A store in Canada was broken into and robbed last week, and the owner is very confused. He's confused because his store is called the Free Store, and everything in it is free. Customers pay $2 to drop off stuff they don't want, and they can take anything they want for nothing. Well, luckily, the thieves were caught before they could steal Monopoly money from the local kids. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
In China, what the government wants, the government takes.
Where can I live now? Nowhere. When they pull down my house, I'll camp outside the local officials' homes and live there.
I'm Kai Rizdal. Urban sprawl takes on a whole new meaning when the government takes your house. That story and the numbers next time on Marketplace from American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.